Thank you. प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री वासुदेव गौर भक्तवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौर गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की गंगा देवी की यमुना देवी की भक्ति देवी की तुलसी महारानी की हरिनाम संकीर्तन की हरिहर मृदंग की समवेता भक्तवृंद की इताई गौर प्रेम नंदी Oh glory to these celebrities, oh glory to these celebrities, oh glory to these celebrities, oh glory to Shri Shri Guru Guru, oh glory to Shri Shri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 17.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Ahatojasa.
Sahasram
Ahatojata.
Sahasram
Ahatojasa. Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Divyam Shanubrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanubrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanubrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanubrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Ahatojasa.
Sahasram Ahatojasa.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Divyam Shanubrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanubrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Ahatojasa. Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Atojasa.
Sahasram Atojasa.
Oman Bhogasta Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhogasta Bhoganvai.
Divya Shanugrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Ahatojasah.
Sahasram Ahatojasah.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Ahatojasah.
Sahasram Ahatojasah.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshata Bhoganvai.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Ahatojasah.
Sahasram Ahatojasah.
Oman Bhokshayata Bhoganvai.
Oman Bhokshayata Bhoganvai.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam.
Sahasram Mahatojasa.
Sahasram Mahatojasa.
Oman Bhokshayata Bhoganvai. Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
Divyam Shanugrahan Mama.
ladies.
Divya Varsha Sahasranam Sahasram Mahato Jasaha Bhoman Bhoksheta Bhogan Vai Divyam Shanugrahan Mama Divyam Shanugrahan
Mama. Translation. The Lord then bless all the Pachetas, saying, My dear princess, by my mercy, you can enjoy all the facilities of this world, as well as the heavenly world. Indeed, you can enjoy all of them without hindrance and with full strength for 1,000,000 celestial years. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The duration of life prescribed for the Pachetas by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is calculated by the time measurements of higher planetary systems. Our six Earth months are said to equal 12 hours in the higher planetary systems. 30 days equal 1 month, and 12 months equal 1 year. In this way, for 1,000,000 years, according to the calculations of the higher planetary systems, the Pachetas were allowed to enjoy all kinds of material facilities. Although the lifespan was so long, the Pachetas were given full bodily strength by the grace of the Lord. In the material world, if one wants to live for many years, he must endure the difficulties of old age, invalidity, and many other miserable conditions. The Pachetas, however, were given full bodily strength to enjoy material facilities. This special facility was given to the Pachetas so they could continue rendering full devotional service. This will be explained in the following verse. Om Gyan Timurandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namah Mukham Paroti Vachalam Pongum Langayate Pirim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Guru Vinaharanam Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Bhuma Kadamayam Vedati Swapadam Tikam Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Suhodito Gaurareye Pushpavantu Chitro Sando Tumosho No Mahavadanjaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Krishna Nama Tavasmi Radhika Natha Karmana Manasagira Krishna Gante Javai Vasmi Yugame Vagathir Mama Govinda Valave Radhe Parte Kamam Sada Twariya Iti Janatu Govindo Mantvayasa Radhe Vrindavan Adishe Karunamrita Vahini Kripaya Nija Padaja Dasyam Majam Pradiyatam Tavai Vasmi Najivami Twayavina Iti Vidyaya Devi Tvam Nayamam Taranantitam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Devracha Padidanam Bhavadevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namah. So in this verse we are continuing to hear of the conversation between Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayana and the Pachetas. And here in previous verses he has given them a wife. The Pachetas are all brothers, they are the sons of Prachinabarhi Sat. And how many of them are there?
100.
How many of how many brothers are there?
10, yes. 10 brothers.
10.
Yeah.
So thought it was more. Okay, so it's 10 brothers and they're given one wife. So similar to the situation with the 5 Pandavas. 5 Pandavas and 1 Draupadi. So here are 10 Prachetas and one girl has been given to them by my Lord Narayan as their wife. So we are more familiar with polygamy as a concept, that is one man with many wives. And there are many, many examples of that in the Vedic literature. Sri Krishna himself had 16,108 wives. King Chitraketu Maharaj had 1,000,000 wives. And so many, Dasarath Maharaj had 3 wives. Pandu had 2 wives. So polygamy is something that we're more familiar with as a concept, but here is an example of what is called polyandry. It's the other way around, where one girl has many husbands. So Draupadi, she is an example of polyandry and the wife of the Prachetas.
Pramalocha.
Mother's name.
Pramalocha.
Pramalocha, that's her mother's name, right? That's the Apsara.
Pramalocha and Kandurus.
Also.
Same name.
And I'm not getting there quickly here, so.
15 was saved, I think.
It's okay. In the history of the Krishna consciousness movement, then devotees have also discussed this question, to have one wife or many wives. I don't know if it's been discussed the other way, for a woman to have many husbands. And discussed with Prabhupada, in fact, because there is this idea that it is a Vedic concept and we are trying to establish Vedic culture. And so what about it? And from the conversations, it appears that Prabhupada was initially open to the idea, but later he was not supportive of polygamy in ISKCON, particularly because it breaks the laws in most countries of the world today. Unless you're living in the Middle East, you'd be breaking the law. I think the Middle East is pretty much the only region of the world where polygamy is allowed. I don't know where polyandry is allowed anywhere in the world today, legally. So Prabhupada, he didn't want devotees breaking the laws. There is the law of God. And that is called dharma. So according to God's law, that is allowed. But then there is the local laws, the judicial laws, the government laws, and devotees, they follow the law. We are obliged to follow the law of the universe, that is Krishna's law, universal laws, but we are also obliged to follow the local government laws, even if they are established by those who are not devotees. We are obliged to follow them, unless they grossly violate the devotee's possibility to practice bhakti. Then the devotee might stand up against the law. In the Soviet Union, devotees were persecuted in the 1980s for practicing bhakti, just for having japamala in the house, 5-year sentence, for having Bhagavad Gita in the house, hard labor, for having discussed Krishna with somebody, psychiatric institution. Very, very severe. So devotees resisted in that situation. Or sometimes in the past, devotees have been forbidden to do Nam Sankirtan on the street, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was forbidden in Navadvip to perform Nam Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan. So Mahaprabhu resisted that. And in the same way around the world, In different places at different times, devotees have been forbidden. In the 1980s, there was an ongoing saga in Adelaide. Devotees were not allowed to do Harinam on the streets. The police would stop them, and devotees would go out and get arrested, taken to the police station, and released after some time, and then they'll go back out on Harinam, get arrested, taken back to the police station, after some time get released, and they'll go back out on Harinam, get arrested. And it was in all the news media across Australia. So when devotees are forbidden to practice bhakti, then they will resist the law. But otherwise, devotees, they should follow the law, be law, because devotees should be model citizens. So it is not nitya dharma, it is not eternal religious principle, it is not an eternal law that is decreed by Krishna, but it is a naimittika dharma. As a citizen of a certain country, then there is a legal process that establishes order in that country and also sets an example as a model citizen. So we have our eternal our eternal duties, and then we have our social responsibilities, our social duties. So on that account, Prabhupada, he dissuaded his disciples from this idea of entering into polygamous relationships. But there is another reason that Prabhupada gave. And this was that as bhaktas, we are aspiring to love Krishna. Although I must say, there is one example I know of a devotee in the Southern Seas who is a GDC man, also a big donor to Prabhupada, and he helped build a large temple for Prabhupada in one of the major cities. And he had two wives. Prabhupada had him on the GBC as well. But as a general principle, Prabhupada, and he was in a country where he could do that. In Fiji, in fact. Vasudev Punja. But as a general principle, Prabhupada dissuaded for the legal reason, but also he said, as a devotee, we want to love Krishna. We are trying to direct our attention to Krishna. And getting too much entangled in material life can be a great distraction. So we engage with the material world because we are conditioned. So it would be artificial for us to completely cut ourselves off from civic society, from social engagement. So we keep that engagement, we keep that relationship, because we couldn't maintain it otherwise if we cut all of our association with the material world. We're not ready for ananya, exclusive devotion to Krishna. So we engage our material conditioned nature in a favorable way. We might get married, we might have a job, we might pursue education, we might... And with all of that goes so many other responsibilities. You're obliged to attend social functions and... or at work, relating to career, also social functions relating to the family and other families that you are connected with, weddings and so on. So we engage with the world, but gradually the devotee is trying to minimize that. Not all at once, not artificially, but gradually, slowly, as we fulfill those needs, the devotee is supposed to withdraw from those things and be exclusively devoted to Radha Gopinath. So therefore, this engagement, in a way, it is freeing us of that attachment. We engage in a way that is favorable to our bhakti. So that very thing we are conditioned by, in fact, by engaging with it in a regulated way, enables us to become free from it. But when we enter, so then that's the devotee's objective when he or she engages with the world. When engaging with career, when engaging with different social events relating to work or family, the objective is, I'm here, I'm fully participant, I'm fully involved, but at the same time, my longer term objective is to disassociate myself and extract myself from it. So Prabhupada said that entering into polygamous or polyandrous relationships is not favorable to that objective. So therefore he dissuaded his disciples from engaging with them. Even though we have examples of great devotees, Nityananda Prabhu had two wives, Vasudha and Janava. Even though we have examples of great devotees, nonetheless Prabhupada dissuaded. And when we observe, when we study the Vedic literature, although it allows for such relationships, we also see that they can become very complicated and troublesome. Yeah? So yes, Chitraketu Maharaj had 1 million wives. He had 1 million, but what happened? What happened with that in that scenario? He was allowed 1 million wives. He could take care of them. That's another important criteria. You want two wives, you want, can you take care? Can you take care of even one? Can you take care of more? So that is the first reason to say no. Aside from the law. Maybe the law is the first, but can you take care? Is another concern. Chitraketu Maharaj could take care, 1 million wives. Nonetheless, what happened? They became jealous and killed his son. They were involved in murder of a child because of their jealousy. Yes, Dasarath Maharaj had three wives. What happened? Was it all rosy?
Run after the boys.
Huh?
Run after the boys.
Yeah, it ended up becoming a major political scandal. Political intrigue. He had three wives, but then there's so much jealousy and involved. He, rather than being equal to all of his wives, he favored one, the youngest. So you marry one wife, she's the first Maharani, the first queen, but then there's someone else. He marries her later, she's younger, maybe cuter. She's dearer, he spends more of his time with her, with Kaikeyi. Yes?
He had 360 wives, three primary.
Oh, he had how many wives?
360.
He had 360 wives and three of them were primary. And of the three who were primary, Kaikeyi was his favorite. Where to find Dasarath? Oh, he spends most of his time in the Palace of Kaikeyi. So Kaushalya, she's the senior. She tolerates. She does more sadhana. When Ram goes to meet her before he leaves for the forest to take them, she's doing the yajna. Either she's doing personally or her hotri is doing, and she's sitting there as the yajaman, as the sponsor. She's doing a yajna that morning. She's sitting in a yajna when Ram goes for permission. So she's doing more sadhana because her husband is spending all of his time with the favorite queen, the younger queen, Kaikeyi. So these are the types of complications that arise. We are 360 or we are three, but that one was able to give a child, so she's favorite, or this one's young, she's favorite. So it makes material life even more complicated than it needs to be. And therefore the bhakta, the devotee, is encouraged, in the best case scenario, to avoid.
What?
To avoid getting involved in that situation. So the Veda does allow for it, but it is less favorable and more entangling. Less favorable for bhakti and more entangling in the material nature. Now, if in some way it might be more favorable, then it would be encouraged, and each case should be judged on its own merit. There might arise a situation. Generally speaking, we could say it's more complicated and entangling. As a principle. But if the opposite were found, then it might be encouraged. Tat tat kama pavartana. Rupa Goswami says, whatever is favorable for bhakti, you engage with. Whatever is not favorable, you reject. So the Veda does allow, but then the Veda allows other things as well for conditioned souls. Allows but does not encourage. The Veda allows for eating meat. They're not on the same level. The Veda allows for the slaughter of animals, offering them in sacrifice and eating them. When you read Manusmriti, long passages, which type of animal you should offer for Shraddha? The antelope, with which characteristics, which color?
Shraddha?
Yes. Lots of detail. For Brahman is this animal, for Kshatriya is that animal, for Vaishya is another animal, turtles, I'm not sure of the details, although I have read it. I don't remember which animal for whom. Which one is best, which one is worse? Lots and lots of detail. So does that mean, I should be looking at the Shastra? If I'm what is my Gotra? I'm a Brahmana or Vaishya? Okay, for me, it will be an antelope. Shastra has made allowance, but it does not mean that it is the
excuse.
Not excuse. It does not mean that it is the higher principle. It is not the higher principle, because the final verse of that section, Manu says that the best is vegetarian, the vegetarian offering. After going through a long, long section describing different types of animals, which one's better, which one's worse, which one's for who, the final verse or two, he said, but the best is if you offer a vegetarian food. And the benefit of this is that it is compared to, what does he say, 1,000. This offering is compared to 1,000 other offerings. If it is vegetarian. If it is a meat offering, then it is, its only value is the offering itself. If the offering is vegetarian, then it is worth 1,000 other offerings. So Manu has allowed for meat, but he says, but the best is if you will not engage yourself with it at all. Similarly, a very popular text in the West, probably the only Sanskrit text that most Westerners have read is Kama Sutra. Written by Vatsyayana. Directions on how to enjoy sensual pleasure, sexual pleasure. This is Kama Shastra. We have Dharma Shastra that is given by Manu, given by Parasara Rishi. Parasara's Smriti, Parasara's Samhita, is much shorter than Manu. And he says there that actually for Kali Yuga, this is the one you should read. Because Manu is too complicated, Parasara Smriti is much more simple and is the Smriti Shastra or the Dharma Shastra for Kali Yuga. So Manu gives us Dharma Shastra. Who gives us Artha Shastra? Yeah? Who said that? Chanakya Pandit, Kautilya. Kautilya Artha Shastra. Kautilya and Chanakya Pandit, they're the same person. So Artha Shastra is given by Kautilya. In fact, his Artha Shastra is a compilation of many other Artha Shastras that are no longer extant today. So Chanakya explains how to do Artha, how to get material gain through politics, through intrigue. So according to that Shastra, you send your spies, you use poison, this and that and the other thing, whatever, to fulfill your objective of gain. Sanda and Ambarka, they were teaching Prahlad Maharaj Artha Shastra. It's of great interest to personalities like Hiranyakashipu and Ravana how to get more and more. And the Moksha Shastras, they are the Upanishads. Nama, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So the Kama Shastra, that is most commonly known, it is the Kama Sutra of sage Vatsyayana. Vatsyayana was a brahmachari.
What?
He was a brahmachari. How did he know all of that? I don't know, but he himself was a brahmachari. And when he wrote Kama Sutra, he was practicing brahmacharya. And again, after describing so many elaborate sexual positions, he says, but the best is to avoid this complication. Better is to avoid sex life, to practice brahmacharya. It's there. If you want to engage with it, this is the best way to do it. He explains very nicely. And different different levels of engagement as well. A prostitute will do this, a brahmana will do that. Different details. And then he says, but the best is brahmacharya. Best is to avoid all of this. So again, here. Although the Veda allows for polygamy, polyandry, best is if you try to limit your material engagement. But here it is a favorable thing. Krishna is giving them a wife. They are 10. Krishna gives them a wife. You marry her, she's a good girl. She'll be good for you. And I give you a million years, celestial years, to enjoy, to engage with the world, to enjoy, to satisfy your senses. But do so with thinking of me. Do so with me as your ultimate objective. You are in this world, you are princes. You obviously have material attachments and desires. Here's a good girl. You take care of her. Together, as 10 brothers, I give you a million celestial years to enjoy this world. But how does Prabhupada finish his purport?
To create prajñā.
The prachaitas, however, were given full bodily strength to enjoy material facilities. This special facility was given to the prachaitas so they could continue rendering full devotional service, as will be explained in the following verse. So Krishna tells them, you enjoy. Being conscious of me, conscious of your relationship with me. And when you have fulfilled your material desires in a religious way, then you become fully engaged in devotional service. Exclusively engaged in devotional service. That is the Vedic system. Brahmacharya is a time of training where you learn the Veda, where you learn to serve the spiritual teacher, respect for authority, control the senses, and then go and engage with the world as a grihastha. Become active and involved and fulfill your material needs. And when you realize how difficult the material world is, but you have also fulfilled to some level your material aspirations, and in a religious way, then you withdraw as a vanaprastha and finally as a sannyasi. So Krishna here will encourage the prachaitas in a similar way. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Two things. One is, yesterday in a class, Prabhu was mentioning that there are 5 things are prohibited in Kali Yuga. And one of the things is offering non-vegetarian shraddha.
Okay.
So even if someone wants to do it, it is prohibited. So there is no. And second one. Sorry, I forgot.
I'm not sure what those 5 things are. I know one of them is sannyas, and one of them is to perform the ashvamedha.
Horse sacrifice is one.
Yeah.
Gauveda is second. Third is shraddha, offering normal meat on this.
Okay.
Fourth is having a child from the brother of husband.
Right, yeah. And the fifth is, okay. What was your other question or comment?
I'll try to remind you.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes, Prabhu.
Just a question on your last thing. You said Veda allows it, but it doesn't encourage it. That's fine. So in this scenario, he's asking all the Maharaj practice, even polygamy, but he says, always think of me. But isn't that if you start thinking of Krishna and trying to satisfy your material senses, then you're not completely giving attention to either one of them, neither to Krishna nor to the material senses,
right? I would not agree with your assumption. And the reason being is that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that it is not possible for the materialist to give full attention to anything. Yeah? Yava sayat mita budhir ekeha kurunandana bahu shaka ya antascha budayo vivasayinam. He says that the materialist is not able to give full attention to anything because they have no purpose. And so it's wherever the senses lead them, wherever the mind leads them, they run. And so they're here and there and everywhere and nowhere. He says, but my devotee can give attention because I am the single purpose and goal. Now, if you are engaging with the material world just to engage with the material world, then according to this verse, actually you cannot give your attention anywhere in the world. If you are a devotee engaging with the material world, you may be engaging, but you have an ultimate objective that is Krishna. So you're quite clear on what your values are. You're quite clear on what you will reject and accept. You're quite clear about what you know, what you will do, what you will engage with or not. Yeah? So the... So in fact, the devotee will be able to engage with the world in a more focused way. Yeah? When you are in a situation you don't know what to choose, you'll end up choosing whatever is your highest value. Here's a great opportunity for investment, but it is with a company that is involved in human rights abuses, for example, or animal abuses. So what's your value now? If your value is more for profit than money, then you'll go with it anyway. But if you have more of a value of respecting human rights or animal rights, then you will refrain. So depending on our values, we will choose in different situations. Most people in the material world are not clear what their values are, so they're confused. Somebody who knows what their value is, they can very quickly make a decision. They have a framework in which to decide and operate. Is that clear? So the devotee is clear what their value is. The value is Krishna. And so when we engage with the world, we're very clear about what we will and will not touch, about where we will and will not go. So the focus is quite clear. Yeah?
In that case, then, the way we approach the material energy or material things is to such that if somewhere it leads towards the bhakti or leads towards the relationship with Krishna.
Yeah?
That's the main.
So we engage the world with the world, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave an example to Raghunath Das Goswami. He said if a woman has a secret lover, she will do her housework even more efficiently, effectively. So the husband comes home and wow, everything's perfect. He's nothing to doubt, nothing to criticize, nothing. He's satisfied in his illusion. My wife really loves me. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das Goswami, he says, the devotee in the same way, they'll do everything perfectly in this world.
There's another example Prabhupada gives of how some ladies in India, when they have to carry water from long distance, they would carry two layers of water in their head,
okay,
and still they would go talk with people and just walk on the way.
Uh-huh.
Similarly, he says, devotee, although he engages in material, he still balances the spiritual mind.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah. We're just about to say that similarly, the devotee in the material world, with that example.
Oh yeah, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath, he says, in the same way, you have your internal devotion to Krishna. So he says, so then therefore you should do your material duties even more perfectly, so that people will see you as a materialistic man.
No doubt.
Huh?
No one can doubt on
you. No one can doubt you as your credentials as a good materialist.
And that's good for, so, evidently badly devotees, or
in Raghunath Das's case, yeah, he wanted to run away. He wanted to be a devotee, like full time, with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, you stay at home and you do your duties even more perfectly because you have your secret love that is Krishna in your heart. Someone over here had their hand raised.
Earlier in the class, you mentioned about Naimittika Dharma and also the eternal dharma.
Yeah.
And that was in the context of like legal implications in the social dharma and versus the eternal dharma.
Yeah.
So, as a devotee, see if we come in a situation that, you know, we are in a particular country and when we're being able to practice Krishna consciousness. So, in what extent do we draw a line that, okay, you know, this is going out of our way and we should protest? So what's the bare minimum that the devotee should actually follow?
Endure. Catch the question? I was saying the devotee should follow the law unless it is impeding their possibility to practice Krishna consciousness. And so Shekhar was asking, if we go to a country where there are some obstructions, to what level should we resist or not?
Yes.
Something called apat dharma as well.
I beg your pardon?
This is called apat dharma as well. So in the dangerous situation, dharma allows concession.
Yeah. If you're just coming into a country where there's great restriction on your practice of the Krishna consciousness, you might consider, why am I even coming here? Yeah? Better go to a country where you can practice Krishna consciousness without hindrance. So that's one consideration. Chanakya Pandit says, Niti Shastra, Artha Shastra says, do not live in a place where there is no good doctor, where there is no river, where there is not a righteous king or a dharmic king. So if you're going to a country where the country is so unrighteous that it will not allow you to practice Krishna consciousness, then you might question, why am I going there? That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you're going because... You have a phone call?
No, that's... Sorry, no.
Time for prasadam. But maybe you're going because... But maybe that's the place where you were born and grew up and all of your business relationships and family are there, so you must stay there. Then it's a different question. Or unless you're a preacher who's going into that country specifically to preach, then you will consider what is more favorable for bhakti. So if I resist, am I going to endanger the devotees and have the whole society banned completely and totally thwart any effort or if I'm a little more self, might I be able to do more? With gatherings that don't bring attention. Practices in a way that go under the radar. Maybe the government's even aware, but because it's under the radar, I'm not bringing so much attention to what I'm doing. They allow it to go on. So those you'll consider in a different way. In some countries, it's like the bodies. They don't go out and bring attention, but then they'll just get squashed altogether. So that's stupid. But they can do things that are under the radar, the government knows, but because they're not openly advertising, they allow it to go on. You remembered your other point?
Actually, in one of the class, Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj or Bhakti Charan Maharaj was mentioning that this Manusmriti, it's not a standard book. It can be changed based on time, place and circumstance.
Mm.
So then, as you mentioned, in Manusmriti is mentioned all these things, you can eat this or you can sacrifice this. So how can we relate that or consider that with the day and age?
Well, first thing is Parasara Smriti is the Dharma Shastra for the sage. That's the first thing. Manu also says that according to your local customs, if your family customs are different, he says you default to your family customs. Or if your regional customs are different, you default to your regional customs. Like for marriages and so on. Different parts of India, it's a different coloured sari or how the ceremony is observed. He says you default to your... So, Manu gives a general guideline, But then he also says you default to your regional and family customs. Otherwise, Parasara Smriti is the Dharma Shastra for this Kali Yuga. But then the other consideration is that Prabhupada, he commented, he says, according to Manusmriti, you shouldn't even read Manusmriti, because you're not a Brahmin. He told one of his disciples. Mandavodi asked for permission, can I read Manu's Dharma Shastra? He says, according to Manus, you shouldn't even read it. So don't bother. And in fact, if you do a comparative study of Manu and Bhagavatam, you will find most of what's important in Manusmriti is in the pages of Bhagavatam. I've done that comparative analysis. There are sections of the Bhagavatam where Narada Muni is giving instruction to Yudhisthira. Is it the seventh canto? I can't remember. Chapters and chapters, the ideal society. Chapters and chapters, it's all Dharma Shastra. And if you compare, you'll even find the verse structure, the language of the verses is similar. Then if you go to the 11th canto, Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, Uddhava Gita. Therein he also describes Varnashrama Dharma. And between those passages, those sections, anything that's important in Manu is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's why our acharyas, not only why, but that's our acharyas, they emphasize Srimad Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. All the important essential instructions of all the Vedas is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. To analyze Dharma, you might look at Manu, but if you, because it is a specific focus, the magnifying glass on Dharma. Bhagavatam is very broad, but Bhagavatam gives us Dharma in relation to bhakti. So that is why Bhagavatam is the cream. Because it doesn't just give us Dharma, it gives us everything in relation to bhakti. Okay, we're over time. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Nitya Gaur Premanandini.